This is 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd, and on your smart speaker, we are People Powered Radio in northern Minnesota. Join us at KAXE.org. Bemidji's Nightly Light Parade is Friday, November 28th at 6 p.m., mainly on Beltrami Avenue. Following the parade, head to the waterfront as the switch is flipped to light up the town. The 16th annual Brainerd Turkey Run is Thanksgiving morning, beginning at 9 from the Brainerd Armory. Proceeds benefit Shriners Hospital for Kids. Run or walk 1 mile or 5 kilometers. Find more info and register at BrainerdTurkeyRun.com. You can cut your own Christmas tree in the Superior or Chippewa National Forests. Permits are now available at recreation.gov. You may also stop by a district office to get a permit. And don't forget to visit our website, KAXE.org, for the latest Up North report, bright spot, and set list.
You're my little potato. You're my little potato. You're my little potato. They dug you up. You come from underground. The world is big, so big, it's very big. To you, it's new to you. You're my little potato, you're my little potato, you're my little potato, dug you up. You come from underground. Let's talk about root crops.
They dug you up.
Lamb chops. And things to eat like apples and cheese and bananas and cream, jellies and butter. It's late at night. I hope this little bottle helps you go to sleep. They must have grown you wild to make a grown man a child. I'll go and play in the mud to be with you, my spud. Potato, when you came out looking red as a beet, you had wrinkles on the bottoms of your feet. Oh, oh, now you are so sweet, potato. You're my sweet potato. You're my sweet potato. Dug you up. You come from underground. You smile. You're my little potato. You're my little potato. They dug you up. You come from underground. You're my little potato. You're my little potato. You're my little potato.
That lullaby from Metamora. And I would like to add a welcome to the planet Earth, to all the babies that are being born these next few weeks. Your son is in the sign of Libra. Balanced and tolerant. We're going to need you around here. And happy birthday to you if this is your time of year. But today's show isn't about babies or about equilibrium. It's about tubers, rutabagas, radishes, garlic, and spuds, all the gifts of the edible roots that folks have been so busy pulling out of the ground lately. We'll hear today from savvy gardeners and savory cooks, all of us digging our roots. Hope you can stay tuned for this vegetable stew on Stay Human. But before we get to the soup, we have to attend to the harvest. From Feeley Township near Warba, here's writer Karen Noyce.
The thing about roots. The fun of potatoes and carrots and such is what's unseen. What's never known until the day you take the spade and, fingers tingling, you dig and watch to see what bubbles up from within that garden bed. The one you tended with such care for so long, through sun and cloud, shine and rain. But the thing about roots, your carrots and parsnips and potatoes and such, is that on that day, that harvest day, you cannot grab or yank, save in the loosest of soils. You cannot plunge your spade or fork into their midst willy-nilly, because little is worse than watching the dirt fall away from a tuber gashed or gored or severed by your careless wielding of a harvest. Whether blue ribbon spud or common kitchen fare, even the scabbiest of lumps doesn't deserve that, not when they have spent their season doing their very best with what they have been provided. No, there is nothing good in the moment the carrot top gives way or its body snaps under your tension because you have assumed it would happily jump from its rooted life into your hand. What is uglier than carrot rescue? Going back in a second time, this time with dry, clumsy fingers, arthritic now from all the times you did not learn before, to scratch the orphaned orange tips out of the dark, solid footings. There is no rejoining those severed surfaces, now sullied by juices and dirt and your frustration. No, listen. The only way to bring your crop into the light of day, whole and unscathed, is patience. Give a wide berth when first you probe. Loosen and nudge, then coax and lift. Yield when they resist. Dodge the unexpected knobs and twists and the split and intermingled fingers that are so very vulnerable to a sideways glance from your rudimentary tools. Float those bodies into the light, each shape and surface intact, no flesh squandered. Today, I go about my chores and I muse upon roots, how they grow under my loving watch, yet shape themselves in privacy, along paths and force lines I cannot see beneath the skin of earth that they have landed in. And as I muse, the brooding girl child of 12 that I call Grand walks by with a grunt to my greeting. A flat, wordless look, one eyebrow raised, returns my smile. Oh, I want to plunge my spade into that fertile place beneath the flesh and probe and dig and pull for some familiar little fruit from that now mysterious soul, some hint of shape below to assure that bounty awaits the other side of childhood. But no, no, no. I go my own way out the door and tend to garden chores. I give that space, and for today I will leave those roots intact, and watch and wait until I sense that something ripe is there beneath, ready to bring to air with proper coaxing. No, for today, I will do best to fill my head with parsnips and potatoes and carrots and such.
Karen Noyce. Thank you. I'm Michael Goldberg, your host for this weekly mix of words and music. There's always something of a goulash about it. And this week, we're celebrating edible roots, at least a few of them, which, of course, will always ground us in our cultural roots. I mean, I suppose if you were descended from landed gentry or maybe from industrial robber barons, you might have your own special family traditions that don't have to do with these roots, but most of us are only two or three generations removed from people who ate what they grew and stayed alive by storing enough food for the winter. My people were peasants until my parents' parents got on a boat to Ellis Island. When my dad was a kid, his father grated horseradish every year, just as he had done as a child. Only by then, he lived in a two-bedroom apartment in the Bronx, set up on the fire escape, tears in his face as he filled jars of the stuff. That's if the weather was good. Otherwise, he'd take over the kitchen and the whole family would get the heck out of there. Horseradish is kind of an acquired taste, and I think it's acquired in much the same way as our cultural roots are acquired. I like to think of my Grandpa Joe when I mix a little horseradish into the sour cream and dollop it into a nice cold bowl of soup. And I think of my other grandpa, too, because he always used to say, "You can't beat borscht." Here's Pesoy Kotelenko with a bissel Yiddish borscht.
Я хочу спеть песню Ефима Черного на стихи Мейера Харатса из репертуара Адрианы Купер, которую мы все любим и помним. Эта песня называется «Борщ». Это идышская песня, но не тот борщ, который мы все знаем, а тот борщ, который мы все тоже знаем. А бисселе борщ мит дойт, он а бисселе эринг мит кройт, он а бисселе эпес мит завававаут, он а бисселе каше мит шмаут. Kellen locks mit joich und simmes a bissle hoi. Da sieht ein kurzen Menü, ba scherens gehot in ju. Jaba bai, jaba ba bai. Ba gi ba bi ba 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 bai. Ba ba ja ba ba ja ba 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 ba. Ja ba ba ja ba 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 ba. Ba scherens Zucker zu Tee. Latkes nit an ei. Zu die Schweine fisch, bei Scheren sah Gas zum Tisch. Ai, jaba, bai, jaba, bai. Ai, jaba, bai, 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 bai. Манты, кельбаса, манго, ласси, браун, райсы, чучвара узбекская, такая штука, много лука, жареное тесто, соус, песто. Еще имеет место каперини, ром, кашаса, бочка, кваса, водка, чай, sophisticated drink, махитн, general, salt chicken, уной, халяс, корон, кока-колн, равиолн, тирамисн, моцареон, кушайте, брателн, чтоб вы были все здоровы, как коровы, и на гутер шоу. Und da sieht ein kurzen Menü. Mascher uns Gott ein Jo.
I asked my friend Noreen Hautala if she would tell me something about her favorite root vegetable, and she said she couldn't do just one. She would have to pick two.
The humble daikon radish. We didn't really start having a culinary relationship until the beautiful multicolored daikons started showing up at Kent Lorenzen's and Bruce Young's Grand Rapids Farmers Market stall. Voluptuous, lobed, white, purple, red, and even light green daikon radishes. Known as Chinese radishes, white radishes, and Japanese radishes, these members of the cabbage family are wonderful cruciferous vegetables. Kent and Bruce grow them on their farm on the banks of the Mississippi River. High in fiber, low on the glycemic scale, brimming with vitamin C, antioxidants, calcium, potassium, folic acid, anthocyanins, and flavonoids, daikon radishes bring great benefit to our health. The only caution is for those who have a tendency to grow gallstones. Even the leaves have as much vitamin C as most oranges. Some say they originated near the Mediterranean and traveled to Asia along the trade routes. In Asia, daikons are considered a superfood. Korean, Chinese, and Japanese claims include daikons as rebalancing the digestive system, boosting the immune system, and gently cleansing the body. For these reasons, they're recommended in traditional Asian holistic medicine to be used by people addressing the side effects of chemotherapy or radiation cancer therapy. Daikons can be eaten raw, fried like French fries, in salads, on sandwiches and soups, or fermented as various pickles or types of spicy kimchi. If you've ordered a vegetarian taco at the Grand Rapids Farmers Market, you would have seen them fashionably dressing your taco as lovely circles of white and purple or white and red delicate slices. If you have yet to introduce yourself to the humble yet elegant daikon radish, please do.
Noreen Hautala, so what about your cultural edible roots?
So I grew up in a household with Suomalainen people, Finnish people, and my parents spoke Finnish before they spoke English. And they spoke Finnish together in English their whole lives. And one of the things that Finnish people like are rutabagas. And so when they adopted the Welsh Cornish pasties, you can't have a pasty in a Finnish household, a Suomalainen household, without rutabagas in the mix of the vegetables. And they make a special holiday, usually it's a holiday special thing of out of rutabagas, and it's like a rutabaga puree mixed with farina and lots of butter and some kind of spice. I don't even remember what my mom and grandma would put in. And it comes out like a, almost like a consistency of mashed potatoes, and it's delicious, and it's often eaten on at holiday meals. In fact, that's how we used to have them when we would share holiday meals with Anna and Iria and Rauni Lindgren for a Finnish get-together for the holidays, and it's really tasty. So that's some of what I know about rutabagas.
Finnish tune from John Berquist. Noreen talking about the health benefits of the radish reminded me that I know someone who harvests all kinds of roots. Lori Witzkowski is an herbalist. Her house full of teas and tinctures and dried and ground up roots. I asked her what drew her to this practice.
When I was a child, I had this notion, I have no idea where it came from, that there were four sacred, I don't remember if I called them plants or flavors or essences, but I remember three of them, I think. Dill, almond, thyme. And I'm not exactly sure what the fourth one was right now, but I had this conviction as a child, like I say, I had no idea where it came from, that there were these, that there was something sacred. All, you know, I already had a sense of a sacred, meaningful gift from these essences, these flavor essences from nature. And I was lucky enough to grow up in a house with a garden. And so I grew up, you know, on my belly looking, into the stems of plants and the places where they join the ground, you know, and just imagining being there, being tiny in there. So I've always loved plants a lot. During the pandemic, I decided to go back to school. I found an herbalism course in our wonderful Minneapolis Community College. In the past, I've pursued this and that workshop and class over many years, and also just my own explorations in my own garden. But this was fun to sort of have a, you know, I had to do a lot of writing and studying. And part of what we looked at was getting a brief sense of the history of medicine, or what has brought us to this point. In medicine, of course, herbal medicine is the foundation for the pharmaceutical industry and for our current paradigm of medical healing. And I think the fork, the tangents that have, that we need to sort of come back from, have been about chemistry and the fascination of, of course, it is fascinating, with analyzing and sorting out the chemical constituents of plants, right? But the problem has been isolating all that, you know, so they've taken certain constituents of that plant and isolated them and taken that isolated constituents to treat this symptom, right? But it's taking the symptom out of its context and taking the medicine out of its context. And so they, and those, you know, again, it's like, it's the opposite of a holistic view of things, right? So you have these medicines that have all these side effects, and it's because they don't have the mitigating factors that exist in the whole plant. And you have the treatment of chasing a symptom without looking at the root cause of the symptom and without looking at our bodies as systems, right? Including musculoskeletal, the glandular system, you know, lymphatics, our circulation, our heart, our brain, our neurology, emotions, you know, spirit, they all are together in our body, and they all work together. And in pharmaceutical medicine, they are treated as separate entities with no relationship. And it just doesn't make sense, and it doesn't work. And it sets some of those, actually sets some of those elements of ourselves against each other. Whereas, you know, folk medicine, healers, witches, midwives, country doctors have throughout human history kept us in contact with the nature that's all around us. So here we are in autumn, and this is a beautiful time to dig roots, because the plants now have done their thing. They flowered, they've seeded, and so now all the energy of the plant is going into the roots to invest in the future, right? And so that's where all the gold is. That's where the beauty and the magic is right now, is in under the ground. And while the ground is still soft now, and as the plant energy is receding into there, it's the perfect time for us to dig down and connect with it, you know. So for example, dandelion, you know, which is everywhere. Have you ever had roasted dandelion root tea? Oh my God. It's so good. What's beautiful is to use the medicine that's right here, because it, not only is it at hand, not only is it this generous gift, but it's also, that plant has been growing and surviving and learning how to thrive and be resilient in the same conditions that we are, the same climate. And on a yearly basis, it suffers the same whims of nature that we do. And so their adaptability to those conditions can transfer to us, can help us. So we understand each other on a really deep level.
Thanks to Lori Witzkowski. Still to come in this hour, The Secrets of Garlic with Warren Alto and Jesse Davis, Maggie Montgomery from her garden, and Matthew Miltich sits down to a bowl of rich soup. You're tuned to Stay Human on your Northern Community Radio Service, KAXE, KBXE, streaming at KAXE.org. We are independent and supported by our listeners. Thank you for keeping it going. This program receives additional support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund, part of our state's legacy funds. Here's an original composition built from his roots, Sam Miltich with Zardas Miletic. Zardas Miletic by Sam Miltich. I went over to his house last week and I asked him to tell me what's the first word that comes into your mind when I say roots.
Nourishment. Things that can hold you through the long, cold winter. They can warm you and bring sustenance when you need it most. My roots, like all roots, are somewhat tangled and twisted. After all, I am a millennial living in the 21st century. My roots still mean something to me. Miltich isn't an original name, just something my great-aunt Catherine made up to make us sound more American, and if that was her goal, she didn't do a very good job of it. Great-uncle Steve was far more effective when he changed his name, Stiepo Miletich, to Steve Miller, but I digress. No, our family name is Miletich. My great-grandparents were both Croatian immigrants. Like oh so many in this part of the world, they came because of work in the iron mines. After having 10 children and a life saving carefully stored, they took my granddad and 8 of his 9 siblings back to what was then the Kingdom of Yugoslavia, where they hoped to stay. In 1922, 100 years ago now, was not a good year in Stari Kraj, the old country. Our family and others in the home village of Miletici lived on the brink of starvation between the two great wars in Europe. So when great-grandpa Andro Miletich procured a sack of potatoes for the family, people saw him as the richest man in the village. Well, I grow them every year, those hearty potatoes, the wonderful root crop I need to do nothing to preserve other than dig them, dry them, and store them in a cool pantry. Potatoes are a staple for Slavs. I know this well from my own heritage and the potato patch my father always had. But I also knew about the ever-important potato in Slavic culture because of my old musical partner, Peter Ostrushko. Peter and I always performed his song with the lyric, "My people were built low to the ground for picking potatoes."
In a very fertile soil they call Ukraine. My people, they were born to suffer and toil and pick potatoes. My people, they love to eat pig meat like pickled piggy feet and had cheese that's oh so sweet. My people, they love to eat piggy meat when they not picking potatoes. My people do things with sour cream that would make a grown man scream. Even Bob Dole would blush and quiver. My people, they love their sour cream in borscht and baked potatoes. Our priests, they got garlic on their breath. They promise us life after death and they smell like old incense. Our priests, they got garlic on their breath when they bless potatoes.
That is the Slavic side. The other side of this is that my mother's side is Norwegian, and I need to recognize that, of course, and it seems as though that every Scandinavian home in Minnesota has lefse on the table at Christmas. Our family friend Dave Hagman is kind of a master of making lefse. When I made lefse out of our homegrown potatoes, it was kind of lumpy. It wasn't near as good as Dave's, which is flat and smooth and wonderful. So that always shows up at that time of year as well. So I think I have potato roots on both sides of the family.
And then there's my side of the family. Are you coming to my latke party?
Of course. I'm coming to the latke party at the Odison Goldberg home. So we've been doing that for my entire life. And there's kind of a funny story that goes along with that, which is when my sister was just a little girl, she was at Murphy Elementary School in kindergarten, and they were talking to the kids about what their family's religion was, and we grew up somewhat secular in the Miltich household, but we attended all of our family friends' Jewish holidays, so Mati's response was, "I think we're Jewish." So that goes down as family legend.
Well, I'm counting on you being there because you grew some really good potatoes. This is a rare variety, isn't it?
Very rare, quite rare. It was, I think it was actually probably developed in Wabana Township, of all places. This is called the Yukon Goldberg potato. It has a somewhat of a sweet texture to the flesh, which I like. It can be quite delicate, and especially either mashed or grated is an especially good way to use it. Created, of course, for Hanukkah and for latkes.
Now our menfolk drive those big Oldsmobiles. There's a certain sex appeal with that certain Cossack behind the wheel. Our menfolk drive those big American-made Oldsmobiles, and they haul potatoes. Women got those old world kind of breasts, you know, the kind that can crush you to your death when they squeeze you to their bosoms. Our women, they're like saints among the rest, cause they taught us how to pick potatoes. Now my people, only vote Republican, like for Richard Nixon, Gerald Ford, and Ronnie Reagan, they'd like to see him again.
people only vote for real men, but then again they drink distilled potatoes. Our children, they're like round ripe cantaloupes. They got lips shaped like garlic cloves and onion sets for little toes. Little Boris and Natasha, they're like round ripe cantaloupes, and they grow and grow and grow like new potatoes.
Music today on Stay Human. I'm Michael Goldberg with friends and neighbors sharing stories and just digging it. It's been years that I wasted buying garlic in the supermarket. I never did grow it, and I thought garlic was just garlic. But thanks to the Grand Rapids Farmers Market, I know better now. Warren Alto with Trout Lake Garlic Farm has changed my life. Everything tastes so much better now, and I buy different varieties from him for different dishes. Warren Alto.
We grow all hardneck garlic, and we have different variations of the hardneck. One of them is Roe Campbell, another is a purple stripe, and then we have a glazed purple stripe and a porcelain. The purple stripe is genetically primal. Wild origins. That's the oldest garlic that there is. It's kind of the original. The porcelains have a much larger cloves. Don't store quite as well, but they do store pretty well. The Roe Campbell also has very large cloves, but I would say the purple stripe and the glazed purple stripe are my favorite ones to grow. There's hundreds and hundreds of different varieties. We're currently growing 8 right now. We've experimented with probably 20 different ones, trying to find ones that work out in our soil and our climate and whatnot. And we're narrowing it down to the ones that really seem to grow well. We were on vacation in France, and the farmers markets in France are just insane. And it was the first time, we've traveled quite a bit, and it's the first time I've ever had jet lag. So we were up at 4 in the morning every morning, and we just go out walking in the cities. And the farmers markets there are just incredible. And we came across a garlic seller, and he had some beautiful garlic, and I stowed away 5 bulbs in my luggage and started to grow it, and it did okay the first year, but it was a soft neck variety, not a hard neck, and that doesn't do as well in northern Minnesota, so it just kind of fizzled out, but it was kind of fun to experiment with. In St. Paul, so their farmer's market is very similar to the Grand Rapids farmer's market. You have to be within 50 miles, I believe, down there as well. It's not like the Minneapolis farmer's market where they can sell bananas and whatever. In St. Paul, it's a local farmer's market. So there's a big Hmong presence there. So when we see garlic, it's very expensive. So I'll go down there occasionally and scope out some big what I'm going to call seed garlic, but they're selling it as culinary garlic. So we got some last year, which I am almost positive is chestnut red, but I'm calling it mung garlic. And it turned out beautiful. It grew great this year. So, you know, I always say I need a better spiel when it comes to describing each and every one. But to me, and maybe it's just because I'm around it so much, when I cook with it, I have a very hard time telling the difference between it. But when you're eating it raw, which most people don't do, is when you can really tell the nuances if it's more sulfury or more garlicky or whatnot. And the chestnut red is just a great one for that. And in that purple stripe variety, we also have Belarus, which is an excellent one in flavor and appearance. Actually, it's beautiful. We do a Slovenian and then the chestnut red. Garlic scapes are the flour that the garlic produces. It sends it up and it curls around and it makes little seed garlics. And you want to pick those so that the garlic is sending more energy to the bulb instead of to a flour. And they are delicious. They make incredible pesto. They're great in salad dressings or stir fries. They're black peppery and garlicky. I actually prefer their flavor to garlic almost. They only last for a little while and then they're done. But I end up selling quite a few of those and they're delicious. Our barn right now is full of garlic, racks and racks of it just laying on these metal mesh racks, which I'll be clipping starting tomorrow probably. And then we'll start planting hopefully around the 7th, 8th, 9th of October. So right now the barn is very smelly of garlic. Vampires are not around our farm, that's for sure. Alycian is the main very good health component in garlic. And one thing when you're cooking with garlic, that's a chemical reaction that happens. So if you're cooking with garlic, you should chop it up and let it sit on the counter for about 10 minutes or so. And with that chemical reaction with the oxygen, that's when all that good stuff starts happening. So if you cook with it right away, you're just going to cook it out. And you do still cook some out, but you get more of it if you let it sit on the counter chopped up for a while. And plus you get to smell your kitchen. Your kitchen smells very well, man.
Thanks, Warren, for that excellent tip. I'm going to do that from now on. Warren's partner, Jesse Davis, joined our conversation, and I asked him to tell me about garlic history.
Where wild garlic came from was on the Silk Road. And I don't know how to pronounce this town. And actually, Putin was just there. Samarskind, I don't know. They used to trade everything there. Rubies, emeralds, rhubarb, actually, quite interestingly. That was a Chinese thing. But wild garlic came from the stands there in Central Asia. And so it was the perfect spot for it to go everywhere. And that's why we have varieties called Korean Fire, Russian Giant. But, I mean, garlic was in the Egyptian tombs. Garlic has made it to South Africa. Garlic has made it, believe it or not, even to Scandinavia. Just a small amount, apparently. But so it was really at the right place at the right time. And the other thing about garlic is that, you know, it not only was it antibacterial, but it helped cover up really bad tasting food. So just if you aren't very good cooks out there, just saying, buy some garlic, you know, throw some in. It'll taste better.
Jesse Davis and Warren Alto, Trout Lake Garlic. And that is exactly the same advice that my buddy Dan always got from his Hungarian-born mother. Put in a little more garlic, she'd always say.
Spices and vegetables that you can grow. Some are under the ground, some grow tall. Though they all have their qualities, this you must know, that the garlic is best of them all. The Egyptians, Phoenicians, the Vikings, the Greeks, Babylonians, Danes, and Chinese on their voyages took enough garlic for weeks, and their enemies died on the breeze. Since biblical times, in all parts of the earth, it has cured countless sufferings and ills. Oh, if we understood what the garlic is worth, we would throw out our poisonous pills. In Bulgaria's mountains and Russia's white plains, people live to 100 years old. For it's juice of the garlic that runs in their veins. Oh, it's worth twice its weight in pure gold. With selenium, germanium, allicin too, it can fight off all types of disease. So if you've got arthritis, TB, or the flu, just say, peel me a garlic clove, please. Plant some cloves in your garden to keep away worms and the other bad things that kill plants. If you're one of those people concerned about germs, you can drop one or two in your pants. There are spices and vegetables that you can grow. Some are under the ground, some grow tall. Though they all have their qualities, this you must know, that the garlic is best of them all. Oh, the garlic is best of them all. Yes, the garlic is best of them all.
Claudia Schmidt and Sally Rogers with the Garlic Waltz. This week on Stay Human, the edible roots, because that's the time of year it is. Up next, we have this dispatch from the potato patch of Maggie Montgomery.
The earth has started its tilt toward winter. The frost is frosting, and with it has come the end of my ambivalent 2022 garden season. I wasn't sure I wanted a garden this year, but I'm grateful we had one. It was beautiful and satisfying, and it gave us a lot of food. I'm sad that it's over, glad that it's over, and really, it isn't over. There's lots to do yet. Harvest as many fruits and vegetables and herbs as possible. Dig up tubers and starts. Bring in the rosemary and the succulents. Haul in the onions. Plant the garlic for next year. Now that there's been a hard frost, it's time to start harvesting kale. You have to wait until it's downright cold in the low 20s to harvest Brussels sprouts. Wait for the cellar to cool down before harvesting carrots. Dig the leeks later in October. Right now it's time to clean up. Pull the weeds that were hiding under the potatoes, the tomatoes, the squash. Pull the plants themselves, those same potatoes, tomatoes, and squash. And eggplants, cucumbers, cantaloupe, radishes, beets, beans, peppers. Just grab them close to the ground and pull them all out by the roots. Michael, you asked me to consider roots for Stay Human, and with all the uprooting that's been going on in the garden, I've been examining them pretty good. The tomatoes sent their roots 3 or 4 feet in all directions. The sunflowers have big root balls shaped almost like the ones under trees. A couple years back, Dennis went to move a rhubarb plant and pulled up a taproot longer than he is tall. Mint likes to wander and sends underground feelers in search of fresh soil. Same with quackgrass, which one of our friends used to call the enemy. The difference being that mint roots are shallow and pull up easily, while quackgrass runs deep. Dahlias and cannas have tubers that have to be dug up and stored over winter. The root is the first thing a plant sends out when it starts as a seed, and the last thing to let go when I rip it out. Roots anchor a plant to the ground. They send up water and nourishment. Some of them are edible, like carrots or beets. Without its roots, a plant dies. The gardening gurus say you should pull weeds after a rain so they'll let go and just sort of slide out of the soil. In fact, roots never just slide. Wet or dry, they resist. Resist. I've heard that plants are more aware than we generally think, and the roots are at the very root of this awareness. They form a kind of network. not just within one plant variety, like, say, the eggplant network, but between plants and plant varieties, extending to other underground brethren like fungus and bacteria. They are aware enough to know who they are and to know what is not them. There is some controversy about the extent of this awareness, but most scientists do agree that while plants don't have brains per se, they do have a kind of information processing system, mostly in their roots. Sometimes I wonder what a plant feels when it is suddenly uprooted. Does it cringe when it feels me coming with my shovel or garden knife? What is going on in that hidden dark underground, that tangle inhabited by roots and runners, tubers and rhizomes? This is how I see it. This week, I'm tired from digging potatoes. The tubers that will feed us also store the energy that allows the plants to reproduce for the next season. It is to the potato's biological advantage that some human will carefully dig, clean, dry, and store the next generation on behalf of the russet family. The knees of my garden jeans are stiff with dirt, and my back is just stiff. Yet, as I approach the last two long rows of potatoes, I imagine I hear them in their dark root voices insisting, "On your knees, human, dig."
That's Maggie Montgomery. Here's another source of wisdom, this from novelist Octavia Butler, her Earthseed journal. She says, "All successful life is tenacious, interconnected, opportunistic. Understand this. Use it." That's Octavia Butler. I'm Michael Goldberg, and we have one more story for today's show. This from Matthew Miltich, Reflections on a Bowl of Soup.
At noon, I dropped the splitting maul, abandoned my firewood chores, and walked to the house for lunch. I find a bowl of soup in the icebox. I made this soup last week, and what's left is just enough for just me. I heat it slowly in a pan on the stove, transfer it to a suitable bowl, and set it steaming on the table. The day is cool, but I'm heated up from my chore, and though I'm very hungry, both the soup and I must cool down. The steam is aromatic and spicy, and I try to imagine where in the world the spices came from that I sprinkled into this soup. Cumin is native all the way from the Mediterranean to East India. It's ground from the seeds of a member of the family, Apiaceae. But also I use paprika, roasted garlic, coriander, black pepper, fenugreek, turmeric, parsley, and red pepper, these grown and harvested who knows where. I follow no recipe but my nose as I cook and couldn't say how much of this or that of any of these I threw into the pot. The source of the water, though, I know. It's my own well, yielding the coldest, sweetest water I've ever drunk from 240 feet below my feet. When I first began to live on this place more than 3 decades ago, I could not afford a well and so carted in water for cooking and bathing and washing dishes. Soon Lori came to live with me, married me, and my folks, long gone now, took pity on us and helped us put in a well. I've never taken for granted even a single sip of our good water from the day the Fiddledye brothers drilled the well into the very bedrock below us until now. The onion I sautéed in the pan before I added water grew in our garden a stone's throw from the house. I remember the day in May my son Sam came out here from his house in town with a couple of brown paper sacks of onion starts. How we bent to put the baby onions into the newly turned dirt. This year's was a modest crop, but last year we grew an abundance of yellow onions that lasted through the winter. When the onions began to caramelize in the pot, I added the meat of a pheasant, boned and cut into chunks dusted with flour. These I browned. The wheat flour might have come from North Dakota. The pheasant did, I know. I brought it home from a hunt in the Missouri River country in the middle part of that state last fall. The night before the hunt, I played a gig in Bemidji, and after the last set, walked out into the night to discover 3 inches of snow covering everything. I drove all night, eventually out of snow and under stars, to a little town tucked into a bend of the Missouri River, where I arrived just before first light to meet my partners, Chuck and Chris Nielsen, and I hunted that day without having had a wink of sleep. A cold prairie wind roared around us the day long, spitting snow that sometimes blurred into whiteout, and the pheasants we flushed caught that wind in their wings and sailed away, all but the few we took, and my soup today is flavored by one of those. 3 National Geographic-sized carrots from the garden went into the soup. I credit my daughter-in-law, Katie, a ruthless and effective root crop thinner, with the size and quality of our carrots. We've gardened here for 30 years, but my thinning was timid compared with Katie's. We never grew such lush root crops before she stepped between the rows and started pulling excess baby carrots, giving the crop room to grow. A pile of pulled baby carrots beside the garden always looks forlorn to me, lives uprooted without a chance to grow to their potential. But the finished crop is proof of Katie's wisdom. Our rutabagas thrived likewise this year. I picked one nearly as big as a football and used just a portion of it in today's soup. Into the soup also went green beans from the garden and sweet corn from Katie's Uncle Dave's corn patch. I grew corn too, but it ripened without sweetness and I fed it to the chickens. So it was a failure on the one hand, but the chickens devoured it, and for our part we got fresh eggs. The last ingredient I added was wild rice, a good double handful, gathered on Goose Lake with my pal Charlie. Cooked in the broth, it plumped up so full that I was compelled to add another quart of water. Just as I can taste the wild woods in a meal of grouse or venison, I seem to taste the freshwater lake in the rice. And I remember the day Charlie and I riced on Goose. I stood and pulled the canoe through the rice of a modest year's crop, as rice years go, while Charlie, sitting amidships, knocked the kernels from their parent stalks into the bottom of the canoe. On the lake, I have the advantage of Charlie, from whom the wide world except for rice stalks and rice worms and spiders is hidden, while I, like a king, survey the far horizons, the blue sky, the white swans that trumpet from across the lake, airborne flocks of migrating blue-winged teal and ring-necked ducks, little green herons, sora rails, eagles, bitterns. Hour after hour, I pushed the canoe along as Charlie flailed away with his rice knockers. The two of us taking just the briefest lunch at noon, itching from rice beards caught in our shirts and socks, then pushed and flailed for all we were worth until legal quitting time, and talked, as ricers will, of next year. Next year, we'll be better prepared. Next year, we'll scout more rice water. Next year, we'll hit the rice the second it's ripe. We both know, of course, in spite of our talk, that the only sure thing about next year is we, who are no longer young, will be, if we survive, a year older. I intend to survive in part by eating this soup, now cooled enough to taste, which is full of life. Ah, it's better than it was last week, and I eat every bite.
Thanks to Matthew Miltich and to Maggie Montgomery, Jesse Davis, Warren Alto, Sam Miltich, Lori Witzkowski, Noreen Hautala, and Karen Noyce. And thanks to you for tuning in to Stay Human. I'm Michael Goldberg, back this time next week with another hour of story and song.
I'm gonna sit at the welcome table. Sit at the welcome table one of these days. Hallelujah. I'm gonna sit at the welcome table. Sit at the welcome table one of these days. One of these days. I'm gonna feast on milk and honey.
Oh, yes.
I'm gonna feast on milk and honey. One of these days. Hallelujah.
Thanks for tuning in. I'm Heidi Holton. Coming up next, we've got Native Lights Podcast, where Native voices shine. That's followed by brand new from KEXE, the Season Watch Pod, connecting you with the delights of nature. This is 91.7 KEXE Grand Rapids and 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji. We are Northern Community Radio, people-powered radio in northern Minnesota, with Translator K210DR in Brainerd 89.9. You can listen at KEXE.org or on your smart speaker. Thanks for keeping us going. Help us out with your donation. Text the word donate to 218-326-1234. And thank you.
One of the things that I wanted to do in my book is to bring out the role of women in the fur trade. But there's kind of a blank there, and the historians themselves admit it. Well,